For years, the American public has been victimized by the so-called cinematic geniuses, telling us time and again to see inferior movies, leaving us bitter and lost with nowhere to turn. But no more! This travesty of justice cannot and will not continue, because we now have the Cinema Judge!
Hello and welcome to the Cinema Judge. To all my regulars out there, welcome back. Now, if you're new to the show, let me briefly tell you what we do here at the Cinema Judge. We collect evidence from the studios, interviews, clips, world premiere footage, all that kind of stuff. And we make this into a TV show in Bloomington, Minnesota. And it's a cable access show. And I'll give you the website if you want to watch the TV version of this later. But that's what we do. We collect the information, put it together, make one giant infomercial, and we present it to you. And here's the deal. I don't stand in the way. I just give you the evidence. I'm the judge, and you're the jury. I'm never going to tell you not to see a movie, because we all come from different spots in the world. Our paths are totally different. You relate to other things that I don't relate to. The point is, we all have our own visions and our own opinions. Nobody cares two rips what I have to say, because it doesn't matter what I say or what I think. What matters is what you think. You don't need somebody else telling you what to think or what's good or what's bad. That's what the evidence is for. That's my job. I collect it and I go, this is what they want you to think. What do you think? And that's the joy. That's why I like doing this show so much. I don't want to be yelling at Hollywood, criticizing people, all that kind of jazz. I'll leave that up to you, because any movie is somebody's favorite movie. That's our deal here, a movie oasis, a place where we can just sit and talk about movies. The world is a crazy place out there, and we have enough of that. I just want to provide a few minutes out of your time just to hear about a movie, and you make up your own mind. You sit back, relax. We're all very busy people, and maybe if this is could provide a little sliver of time away from all that noise, that's what I want to do. Because not every movie is a blockbuster. Not every movie is worldwide known. And if I could give a little bit of information to you and they go, hey, I might want to check out that movie, then my job is I'm happy. So that's what we do here. You make up your own mind. Because recently somebody approached my brother and says, well, why doesn't he review the movies? Well, I do. I do let you know, you know, kind of what I feel a little bit, but I'm not going to tell you what to do. I hate that. That's what it's all about. Now, approaching the bench today, we have the Hulu original Prey. Now, this is an origin story of Predator. We've all seen the original, of course, and then the subsequential sequels that follow. But I'm going to read here the tagline for this film. The origin story of the Predator in the world of the Comanche Nation 300 years ago. A skilled warrior fights to protect her tribe against one of the first highly evolved predators to land on Earth. And that's what this is in a nutshell. An earlier version of the Predator, not the Predator that's in the newer movies, or I should say the older movies, that Predator is a highly advanced version. The Predator in this film, like the people in it that it's hunting, have limited resources. Yes, it has some kind of weapons, but it's not as insane as the first film and the ones after. Both sides are working with primitive material, generally speaking. Now, here's a trailer for Prey.
Why do you want to hunt?
Because you all think that I can't. I saw a sign in the sky. I'm ready.
Maui Nita.
Oh.
There's something out there. I'm coming with you.
You can't.
I'm trying to protect you.
Protect me from what?
It's time.
It knows how to hunt. I know how to survive. Whatever did this, I can kill it.
Now, before I get too far into the show, like I said earlier, this is a TV show, then it's a podcast. If you want to watch the TV version of this, where you can watch the interviews, watch the scenes, and the red carpet stuff, go to Bloomington, Minnesota's webpage. And the site I have right here is bit, as in like bit, .ly/cinemajudge. bit.ly/cinemajudge. And then you can just watch this. And just for the record, the TV version, you don't see or hear me at all. It's pure show, interviews, and stuff like that. Now, up first, we're going to have the director of this film. And he's going to talk a little bit about it and also what inspired him to make this movie.
I would say one of the significant things that makes this movie stand apart from the others in the Predator franchise is that while it is a genre mashup, the original movie being much more of an action science fiction horror film, this movie is more of an adventure suspense science fiction horror film. So the idea for this story originally came from my interest in making a movie that would be told through action. But I didn't want it to just be a visceral experience. I wanted it to be an emotional one as well. So I sought to infuse the story with the engine of a sports movie, of an underdog story. And then in thinking about that, I thought, well, wouldn't it be tremendous if the making of the movie reflected the story that the character inside the movie was going on. So by setting it in the 1700s and having it be led by a Native American cast and focus on the Comanche, who so often in pop culture and media have been relegated to playing the sidekick or the villain, never the hero. It would just make this experience of watching this movie that much more impactful.
Now, that was the director. Now, up next, we're going to hear from Amber Midthunder, who plays Naru. And she's going to talk a little bit about the process of getting this gig, about when she auditioned for it, not really knowing that it was a Predator film. It's just about a woman who wants to hunt. And that is the true backbone or the source of this movie is, it's real. I mean, yes, it's a Predator film, but it's also about being seen, that this young woman knows she could hunt. She wants to hunt. But a lot of times in societies, whether it be 300 years ago or today, people pigeonhole you, say, this is what you are. This is what's expected of you. You're not going to do this, or we don't think you can. So it's really about one of those stories about, I want to do this, and no matter what you say or what you do, you're not going to stop me from trying to do what I can do. Here's her talking about that whole situation about getting this job.
I first auditioned for this film and for the role of Naru in February of 2020 was the first time that I ever met Dan. And then this film disappeared for a while and came back, and I never had any idea that it was a Predator film. I only knew that it was a movie about a young Comanche woman who wanted to be a hunter. And I thought that she was very interesting. I really connected with her for some reason. And I thought that the movie you know, what little I knew about it, the concept was unique. And I'm a huge fan of Dan. I think he's just, I think the world of him and his ability as a filmmaker, and also a person. So all of those things were already enough for me. And then later I found out that it was a part of the Predator world.
Now, if you're a movie geek like I am, I love hearing about the whole process of how people got their jobs, the whole process. And that's one of the joys of doing this show. A lot of times you're given these interviews and you're like, oh, that's so cool. Because, you know, sometimes you just think, how do people get these jobs? Up next, we're going to hear from Dakota Beavers, who plays the brother of Naru. And he talks about his process of getting to this job. You know, at one point he had this other job idea or, you know, possibility that got canceled. And then the whole domino effect of how this came about. And I just love hearing about that. So he talks about that process, and then he talks a little bit about his knowledge of the whole Predator universe.
This being my first acting role, it kind of came about in a strange way. I had auditioned for kind of this open audition thing that I saw on Instagram a couple years ago, and that ended up getting canceled because of COVID. And honestly, I'm not sure how big of a part I was even meant to play in that. So I just kind of kept doing my thing. I was working a regular job and playing music at night and on the weekends, trying to do that. And then I got an email from this casting agent, this major casting agent, and she said, I want you to audition for the small part in this movie. And I said, oh, okay. And so I did, and I sent in a self-tape. And then I did a Zoom audition with Dan and Jane. And then I think I did another one. And then they flew me out to LA for this screen test with Amber and a couple other people that they were looking at. And it was at that point I started to realize this doesn't seem like a small part. I don't think they would fly me out if I, you know, was playing some small role. Then Dan FaceTimes me a few weeks later, and what do you know, I got the part in a Predator movie. I was semi-familiar with the Predator franchise before I got the role. Most of my experience was with the first one. You know, you hear those iconic lines everywhere you go. You know, Dutch, get to the chopper. And one of my favorites, you know, that I had heard was that whole Billy line, you know, there's something out there and it ain't no man. And I love that. It's so ominous. So, the first one. But after I got the role, I went and binged the rest of them, because I want to know what I'm getting into here.
Now, coming up next, we're going to have a featurette. Now, in this featurette, the studios, they send us this pre-packaged little video, and it has several interviews in there from the director, the producer, to lead actors, and all that kind of stuff. And they're just talking about the movie in general. And if you want to watch a TV version of this, so, you know, it makes a little bit more sense we could see it, because while they're speaking, they intercut on a set footage, little clips from the original, and things like that while they're talking about this particular project. So in this little package, they're just kind of summarizing what this movie's about and all that kind of stuff. Here's a featurette.
There's something out there waiting for us. And it ain't no man.
I was excited about telling a Predator story in a different time. And it is this creature's first time to this planet. And there's great rootability watching someone who's made their own weapon and seeing how are they gonna use those things to take down something with alloy and laser advantages.
Access!
This is the David and Goliath story.
The very first Predator set the bar for all future franchise films. So it gives us some of that backstory and also the indigenous survival.
This version of the Predator is very raw and powerful. It really fits inside of our world.
It knows how to hunt. I know how to survive.
We're going to hear next from Dakota Beavers, and he's going to talk a little bit more about his character.
You know, Tabe is a character that I really felt a camaraderie with because, he's this strong, tough, warrior, but he has this kindness and this kind of goodness that radiates out of him. And that's something that I strive to try and have in my own life if I can. So being able to play this guy as my first character was kind of an honor for me because that's something I want to bring to the world. Young boys out there, so many, they want to be strong, they want to be tough, but that doesn't mean that they have to get rid of their kindness and their goodness. So that was an honor for me.
We're going to hear next from Amber Midthunder, who plays the main character in this film. And she's going to talk about how important and kind of like groundbreaking it is to have this movie be about Native Americans, because there's not very many movies out there that have had just a whole cast like this. And she really appreciates that. And it's really cool that she does. And I think she really takes great pride in that. And then she also discusses the character a little bit, how strong the character is and how determined she is.
There is no shortage of reasons that having a character like Nadu be the action hero in a movie like this is an incredible feat and move. I think having an Indigenous female action hero is historic. And I think it's an incredible thing that Dan and 20th Century did to have such a vote of confidence toward Indigenous people and Indigenous storytelling, to get behind having a figure like that, that people can hopefully look at and feel connected to or inspired by. And also hopefully that is represented in a way that is, I think, grounded and human and relatable and also very cool. Nadu is determined. She is stubborn. She's focused. She's the kind of person that the more you tell her no, the more she wants to prove yes. And she is instinctive. She has this idea of where she should be, or this feeling of being drawn to something, even though people are constantly telling her to do something else or go somewhere else. She has a feeling about where she really belongs and what she really should be doing. And I think the way that she follows her intuition and the way that she follows her instincts are unique and interesting and carry her through quite the journey.
All right, guys, I've been kind of battling this back and forth in my own head, whether to play this next clip or not, because this clip, I don't think it has any dialogue at all. So I always struggle with this because it does set a tone or the feel for a movie, but you're just sitting there. I don't know if you're driving your car, you're sitting in your office, whatever you're doing, and it doesn't have much, what's going on. So I'm going to try to paint this picture so you understand what's happening in the scene. This is the deal. You see the main character, she's out in the woods, and her dog is with her. And just a side note, the dog in this movie is just fantastic. It's like one of the best characters in the show. I mean, there's some great characters, but me being a dog lover, it was so fun to see a dog play such a important part in this movie. Because like the dog and her are kind of a team. They're out there, hunting and training and all that stuff together. So that's just me just being a dog lover. And the dog is in the scene. And what she does is she untraps him from a trap. And his tail got stuck in it. And she's kind of looking at this big bear trap type thing going, what's this thing? And the poor dog's like, oh man, that really smarted. So then the dog gives her a little lick and kiss and all that good stuff. And then you hear a noise. And then she's like, oh, what's that noise in the sky? And she kind of goes out to the opening a little bit and she looks up at the clouds. And then you see this giant, which could be and is a ship coming down to Earth. So it's the first appearance of the Predator on Earth. So there's really no dialogue here at all. But the scene is she's trying to help her dog. She hears a noise. She goes to the clearing and then she sees the clouds kind of separate. And then this ship is coming, to Earth. Here's that scene. Now, we're going to hear next from Amber Midthunder, and she's going to talk about some of the challenges of making this film, but also I love how she talks about her particular background compared to what her character is. She doesn't, it's not exactly the same tribe, but still she understands in what where her people originally came from and all that good stuff. But it's just really great to hear an actor talk about being part of a movie that they are truly are. If that makes sense, you know what I'm saying. Anyway, here she is.
There was not a day of this film that did not present challenges. So it's hard to say, it's hard to pick any one thing in particular that was most challenging about playing this role or making this movie. But I mean, the concept of the idea of not wanting to let anybody down, you know, this obviously takes place 1719 in the Comanche Nation. And I'm not Comanche. I am Lakota, Nakota, and Dakota. So I also come from Plains people, but you know, Comanches were incredible warriors and they were incredible hunters. So it was important to me to represent their people well and to do right by the Comanche people, on top of obviously just wanting to be skilled and even working with somebody like Dan, you know, wanted to like never, you know, come in always prepared or always ready to do my best or you know, face whatever physical challenge there was going to be. I mean, there's truly no shortage of things that made this movie unique.
Jane Myers is up next. She's a producer of this film, or one of them. And she's going to talk about the importance of being authentic from the horses and all the stuff they do out in the real world there. It's just really fun hearing her talk about that.
Okay, so because this film is set with the Comanche Nation, and it's actually set with a band of Comanches that are on a hunting trip storing food and things for winter, it was really important to be authentic and to bring that authentic voice all the way throughout the film. Not only, you know, in the camp that you see, but riding horseback, in wardrobe and costuming, you know, within the face paint. Yeah, the face paint was created with each of the characters in mind. And it was something that they had a hand in as well, because we had a predominantly Native cast. So it kind of just gave them that extra spirit and protection that you would look for when you're developing that type of paint.
Amber Midthunder's up next, and she's going to go a little bit more into detail about her background compared to the people she's playing.
I am Lakota, Nakota, and Dakota. So those are all Plains tribes. So I do come from Plains people, and the Comanche people are also Plains people, though they are obviously a completely different, you know, tribe than me and than I grew up in. But the cultures do, Comanche culture and my culture do share some similarities. So the process of learning about that was really special to me and unique, to be able to show up to work and I was supposed to be learning about, you know, the Comanche people and the Comanche Nation and Comanche history. And so that to me was really fun. And I really felt privileged by that. And it was amazing to learn about, you know, different things that we share, different places where we differ. And of course, you know, if somebody were representing my people, I would take that seriously. And so representing, you know, Comanche people, I definitely took that seriously.
Now up next, we're going to hear from Dakota Beavers, and he too is going to talk about his background.
Yeah, you know, my background, kind of growing up in the Southwest, certainly kind of gave me a good foundation to kind of build Tabe upon. You know, I kind of grew up with a mix of cultures, but it gave me a wide outlook, kind of a lot of things to take and put into this guy. You know, he's not just one thing. He is emotionally diverse, and you get to see multiple different sides of Tabe throughout the movie, which was fun for me. You get to see him at his best. You get to see him under stress. You get to see him emotionally conflicted talking to his sister. It was pretty special for me.
Now we have another scene for you. And like the last one, this one does have a little bit of dialogue. Not a lot, but she's talking to her dog. Now in this particular scene, she's out there with her dog. She has her weapon and she's going to try to catch a deer. But then a noise happens in the sky and then the deer takes off. So then she tells her dog which direction to go, because they have that hand signals that she could give to the dog. I love the character. Like I said before, the dog, boom, okay, I'll do my job there, mom. He books off. She runs off and she's trying to get a good angle on the deer while the dog is trying to, you know, move the deer towards her. And then she tries to throw her axe at it and stuff like that. It's just kind of just, the scene is all about her working with her dog and how really skilled she is, you know, developing that whole, you know, platform of, this woman's very talented. She's skilled. She knows what she's doing. Just kind of saying, okay, what will happen in the future when things start going down? Here's a scene.
A whitetail. Sonny. Maui. Nita.
Now, as you heard, that scene was shot outside in the good outdoors. In these next two interviews, first we're hear from the producer, and then right after that, we're going to hear from the director, and they're going to talk about shooting outdoors and how the producer talks about, you know, when it is done at night, different sounds happened, and it's authentic. It feels real. And that's what's so great about these kind of movies, that they do spend the money and do it on location as much as they possibly can. Because, you know, it's sometimes when they have too much green screen, blue screen, whatever it is, or those, you know, fancy TV screens in the background, it does take a little bit out of it. I'm not saying that movies like that aren't spectacular, but every once in a while, when you know they're outside, you could feel it. It just really enhances the moment because you know they're really out there. Anyway, here that is first the producer, then the director talking about the joys of shooting outside.
A lot of this film was shot at night, you know, just to add the nuance to the Predator. And I really liked it because at night you had the animals coming out and all these other noises and stuff that you wouldn't normally have, you know, if you were shooting in the daytime. So to me, it just added a lot of context.
This movie was shot almost entirely outdoors. It was particularly challenging trying to ford rivers to get to our location or snap on snowshoes to get to some of the locations that we had to scout. And, you know, chasing natural light, it makes for a long, arduous shoot, but also means that the images that we're capturing are going to be unique and precious and not something that's often seen on screen.
Now, you just heard the director. In these next two interviews, we're going to hear from Amber Midthunder and Dakota Beavers. And they're both just going to talk about how much of a joy it was working with this director. And for me, again, being a movie geek, I totally dig it. You know, I know sometimes people say things that, you know, everybody's great, but, you know, I really get a feel that they enjoyed working with him, that he was there for them. And it's just, I just love hearing it.
A huge thing that made this film unique was how collaborative Dan is and how kind and grounded and open. I think he really put a huge effort into making an environment where everybody felt cared for and everybody felt comfortable and supported. And from the beginning, he was so open to, especially with culture stuff, but with anything, like hearing everybody and wanting to know, like, if you have any ideas of little culture things that can be incorporated or this stuff or this thing, like just so open and so willing to learn and hear people. So I'm so grateful for that experience.
You know, one thing that I love about Dan is he's so easygoing. You know, if anybody had any ideas, he was never too scary to approach, you know. In my last scenes, I wasn't supposed to originally have anything on my face, just the bruises and the cuts that I would have anyway. But, you know, I was looking at the blood on myself and the blood all around me. And I was just thinking to Dan, I want to put something on top of it to kind of get his groove back, you know, because he's just gone through this horrible experience. He's got to come back with some swag. So I went to Dan and I said, hey, can I take some blood and do something to kind of give Tabe a little bit of fierceness for this last bit? And he was all for it. So I give him all the credit. Thank you for listening to me, bud. This being my first acting role, there was a lot of moments where I just kind of had to step back and go, wow, this is quite the production. You know, you don't realize how many people go into making a movie until you're sitting in the middle of it. And you're watching so many people going by doing their jobs, and it just gives you an ultimate appreciation. And it's humbling for me because I know that my part is only so much. You've got, you know, grips setting things up just right for you. You've got, you know, the post-production guys, you know, who hold a lot of power in their hands to make you look really good or really bad. So you really appreciate those guys who don't really get seen in the movie. I know without those guys, we couldn't have done it. So I appreciate them.
Now we have another scene for you. And once again, zero dialogue, but I'll try to paint a picture for you. In this scene, there's a bear, and the bear is barreling after the main character, but she's trying to get her weapon back in shape because, you know, it got all kind of messed up and confused. So here she is trying to fix her weapon, and the bear is coming barreling right towards her. But of course, the dog, being the dog that it is, distracts the bear, bolts off, and then the bear starts chasing the dog so that it gives her time to get her stuff ready. So the dog, boom, barrels away, you know, runs down to the river and runs away, and then the bear follows him. But then the main character there, she runs back down, she gets her bow ready, she jumps down, and then she hears a dog barking, comes barreling past her like, oh man, game over, man, I'm out of here. Goes right by her, and then the bear is coming behind her, or, you know, behind the dog. So she tries to, like, shoot an arrow at it, you know, to no avail. So she turns around and bolts. She's running through the river, and the bear's just right on her tail. And then she dives underneath the water because she's going to seek refuge in, like, a beaver dam and stuff like that because, well, what else is she going to do? It's a bear.
Oh.
Now, coming up next, I'm going to have a bunch of interviews from the red carpet world premiere. So up first, we're going to hear from the director.
In this movie, I've been working on for 5 or 6 years, and I am so excited that we finally can talk about all the awesome things that are in it. Some things I'm going to hold on to just a little bit longer. There's some fun Easter eggs in the movie I hope the internet finds, but I'm stoked that it's finally here. I think they will recognize the core, the genre mashup that was the 87 movie we have again here. Now it's much more of an adventure film mixed up with science fiction and horror. We've redesigned the creature a little bit so that it could surprise audiences once again. It hasn't really surprised since that first 87 movie that we first saw the creature, the predator, when it was cloaked, and we thought that was it. We then saw it with its biomass, and we thought that was it. And then it revealed its final form, and this movie gets to surprise even diehard fans of the franchise once again.
Now, some more from the red carpet. First, we're going to hear from Amber Midthunder, who plays Naru, and then, right after that, we're going to hear from Dakota Beavers. And they're just both there on the red carpet telling their tales. Check it out.
I mean, it's very exciting. It feels kind of surreal because, you know, we spent so long making the movie and before that preparing for the movie, that to be here thinking that not only are we sharing it, but it's like it's about to be released to the world is wild, and I'm very excited. To me, it's a story about somebody feeling called to something and the people around her saying, no, I don't think that that is your calling, and figuring out the voice between, you know, those things and what you truly feel in your soul. There's a new version of the Predator, there's different weapons, there's a different design, all that kind of stuff. So I think that I think that to hardcore Predator fans, or even if you've never seen a Predator movie, I think that there's something to enjoy.
One thing I love about this movie is that it's different, but it's also similar in enough ways that it kind of gives you a sense of nostalgia. You know, the first one, you're in the jungle, you know, spooky things are going on, you don't quite know what's happening, and I think that this movie goes back to that in a sense. Things, you know, you're in the woods, things go wrong, not to spoil anything, but different enough to keep your attention. I think people are fascinated with indigenous culture, and they always have been, but there hasn't always been an opportunity for it to be portrayed accurately because, you know, movies weren't made by indigenous people. But having Jane Myers kind of at the head of this project with Dan, a Comanche woman herself, it was just such an honor for me to be a part of, because, you know, she was there every day. This woman works so hard, you know, and she's got more energy than me. I don't know where she gets it, but just watching her kind of champion this thing and make sure it was accurate as we could get it was just amazing.
Now, also from the red carpet, up next, we have producer Jane Myers. And immediately after that, you're going to hear from Michelle Thrush, who plays the mother of the main character. And she really gets into talking about the pride of having so many indigenous people in this movie, a whole cast of Native Americans. Here they are.
I'm thrilled to be here because this film has so many firsts, and me being a native producer, it's even in my language, so I'm totally thrilled. We hit a lot of Easter eggs. I'm a big Predator fan. I was a teenager when the first Predator came out, so that's it's really important to me. So this one is close to the original, and taking it back 300 years in time, we were able to pare down the Predator, so even the Predator looks different. You know, he's more feral, more primal. We even changed the color of his skin. So I think people will see a lot of things in there. Maybe a few lines, and then maybe this film also creates some new lines for people to take on, you know, in the future. So what's really important is to see a cast of predominantly Native people carrying a studio film like this, you know, a feature film, action adventure.
It is so exciting to come to LA. I came from Canada. We shot this in Canada, so it's got a lot of Canadian roots to it. But I had such a great time working with this cast, and I play Amber's mom, and we had so much fun together. It's an indigenous woman that is in the lead, and she is the hero. And it's so rare that we ever get to have an indigenous woman as the hero of anything. For our young people, this is something that they can look up to and have a hero in Amber, and I love that. I am most excited to see an indigenous cast of young people who are going to just be heroes. And that, to me, is something that is really needed and really important.
Now, coming up next, we have a guy that doesn't get any dialogue in the movie at all, and none of them ever do. The guy who plays the Predator, his name is Dane, and he just talks a little bit about this film.
The things that Dan did with this movie you know, give it new life. While still staying true to the traditional Predator way, there are elements of the Predator franchise that come into play, but a little different. And I think it's just right. I like that, you know, it's the focus on Nadu and her journey and everything she's going through. And there's a big, scary entity that's also haunting her as well.
I like what he says there. This movie isn't like the other Predators we've seen, because in the other Predator movies, that Predator is highly advanced. Like the characters in this movie that he's stalking, they have limited, like, weapons, if you will. It's a lot about the smarts. It's all about the mind, not just brute force. In this character, yes, he's highly advanced compared to the tribe that he's hunting, but he is not the same Predator as the ones that were in the original one, in the following ones. So it's not just, they're both at the early stages of the development. We as mankind, and then the Predator, whatever, you know, generation they're from, they too are just not as advanced as they later are. So that's what makes this a little bit more interesting and a challenge. It's not just about the might and the power and all that stuff. It's using your head. How can I try to survive this and, you know, use my skills that I have against this Predator? And it's really fun to see more of the psychological part of warfare, not just the brute force. I hope you enjoyed our in-depth look at Prey. This is currently airing on Hulu, so if you do have it, check it out, because it is just, it's just a fun movie. Just sit back, popcorn, and just live it up. Now, if you guys have any questions, comments, concerns, any way to improve the show, please let me know. CinemaJudge@hotmail.com. That's CinemaJudge@hotmail.com. Because I can't grow if I don't know. I would love your feedback. But now it's shout out time. To all you listeners who listened to the previous episode, this is for you. All of you all around the world, I hope my voice finds you well. For all of you listening at work, sitting at home, in your car, taking a long road trip, or just relaxing, and even some of you, when you play this at night and you just play the episodes through, that is so cool to hear. So wherever, whenever, or whatever you're doing, this is for you. To all my listeners in the United States, Germany, Taiwan, Sri Lanka, St. Paul, Minnesota, San Diego, California, Charlotte, North Carolina, Minneapolis, Minnesota, Pasadena, California, Littleton, Colorado, thanks, hippie, Northport, Alabama, Rosemount, Minnesota, Holyoke, Mass., River Falls, Wisconsin, Lakeville, Minnesota, Moorhead City, North Carolina, Bergenfield, New Jersey, Frankfurt AM, Maine, Hesse, and I think I'm going to try to, you know what, I'm going to butcher this one, but I still want to give you credit, Taipei City, thank you so much, and Aia, Hawaii, is that right? Thanks so much, Hawaii, and Colombo District. That's just to name a few. To every one of you who take time out of your busy life to listen to this show, to have a little escape in the Movieville, I am so indebted to you, because that's what I like to do. I'm just here to share movies with you, and you make up your own mind. Just like I say earlier, a movie oasis, a place where you can learn about any movie, whether it's a blockbuster, independent film, whatever it is. That's the joy of this show for me, is sharing all kinds of movies with you. Now, this week's bourbon shout-out goes out to Cade from FedEx. Every time you come by and deliver me my stuff, I look forward to it. I'm always so disappointed if I'm out running errands and the delivery has already shown up. I'm like, no, I missed them. So, Cade, to you and everybody in the warehouse, thank you, Cade, so much. Cheers. But now, it's the music section. As most of you know, if you're a regular listener, when I'm making the TV version of this, which becomes this, the podcast, I'm cranking the tunes because I don't have to worry about talking here because it's all video. I'm not on there at all. I just edit it and that's just my happy place. So, of course, I'm cranking the tunes. And for whatever reason, I was in a Cars state of mind because the Cars are so underappreciated. Yes, they just recently got in to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame a couple years back. But I think on a general scope of it all, the world has forgotten or don't really appreciate the songs that the Cars put out, and not just their famous ones. They have such an incredible, great catalog. One day, if you have time out there, ladies and gentlemen, find it on YouTube or whatever system you have. You know, I have Amazon Unlimited, and I just have all their stuff lined up. So when I'm in the car's mood, boom, I just hit it on, and as the song goes, let's go. So I first started off with Candio, just loaded with tunes, left and right. And then I moved on to their self-titled first album, The Cars. Then what came up next was Heartbeat City. And that album was really fantastic. That just propelled them in the early 80s into the stardom, not just because of the great songs, but they also had unique videos. And this might be wrong, but I'm because I don't check this stuff. I just kind of start talking here. I think they won the first music video award for best video for You Might Think. And if I'm wrong, I apologize. But they had such great videos in that for that album when MTV first kicked off. It just, boom, just into the stratosphere. But again, give The Cars a shot. They have such a great deep catalog. I don't think you'd be disappointed. And then after I finish Heartbeat City, then I have a couple greatest hits on my device here. And, you know, ones, I forget what they're called, maybe The Greatest Hits or The Cars, what have you. But you can't go wrong. Give them a spin, give them a play, whatever you got to do. But up next, we're going to do something I kind of do every once in a while. It's my guilty pleasures section. Because like you, I'm sure we all do this. We watch movies endlessly, and we watch movies that sometimes you don't always brag about. You don't always, you might not even tell your friends. You're like, this is just my time. And the two examples that I could think of off the top of my head that I watched during the last week, one was Look Both Ways, which is kind of a remake of Sliding Doors. And I did a show on that several months ago with Gwyneth Paltrow about a woman, a situation happens, and in two different versions of her life plays out. And then you see both versions. They play them kind of side by side from time to time, or show you a few minutes of this and that, and what would have happened if this happened. All that fun stuff. It's been done before. But now this version, a similar situation happens. One moment she gets pregnant, and the other scenes she doesn't. So how is her life different when she isn't and when she is? It's that kind of film. So that's one of my guilty pleasures. And then my other guilty pleasure this week was Royal Teen. Just about one of those fish out of water, you know, like a nobody falls for a big shot, or the big famous person falls for the nobody, and then all those trials and tribulations. Just your typical that kind of movie. But yes, that sometimes I fall into that trap. That's my guilty pleasure. Those Hallmark-esque type movies where you just unplug your head and just drift away. So those are my two guilty pleasures for this week. Well, that is it. My glass awaits. I'm thirsty. So cheers to you. Into the movies. So till next time, be well, be good, and I'm gone. I'm Jeff. Thanks for listening to The Cinema Judge.